Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio. The Arkansas Symphony Orchestra and the Arkansas Symphony Youth Orchestra side-by-side concert is one of my favorite events of the season. This year has been, as always, full of challenges for the young musicians, not least that of being the focus, the recipients of attention with Midori, the extraordinary violinist whose career from the age of 11 has confounded the pundits. She was in Little Rock to perform with the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, but mostly to work with the youth orchestras. And we hear reactions from two of the three guests with me today, violinist Taylor McKee, concertmaster of the youth orchestra, principal violist Olivia Richardson, joined by Jeff Robson, associate conductor with the ASO and conductor of the youth orchestra. The conversation starts with their reactions to their first side-by-side concert. Taylor McKee.
I was, I believe, 16, and I have a very specific experience that I would like to share.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, and it was during the fight scene. And I had this moment, I know, shame on me, but I kind of stopped playing for a second. And I looked around and I just saw, you know, bows furiously moving. And I just realized, wow, if I were to take this path as a musician, this is what it would be like. This is who I could be. This is who I am partly. And I just had a moment there where I stopped and realized what my life could have been.
Yes. It was a magic moment almost, wasn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
And Olivia?
I played my first side-by-side concert 3 years ago. I was very nervous. It was my first year in youth, and I hadn't quite mastered the piece as much as I would have liked. And I was pretty worried, but it was really encouraging to see all the violas supporting the students, not necessarily just correcting them for everything they were doing wrong, but also supporting their efforts and trying to help as much as they could.
What decided you to play the viola?
Well, I played piano for about 9 years. I started when I was 8. And when I was 12, I wanted to play a stringed instrument. And I thought about picking up violin, but didn't really want to since it was, I don't know, I kind of wanted to do something off the beaten path. My piano teacher at the time actually was a violist as well. So she offered to teach me viola lessons and I accepted. So, yeah.
So you stayed with her as a teacher until you joined the symphony? I mean, did you go to the youth orchestra at the same time as you were picking up the viola with your teacher?
No. My teacher is in Albuquerque, and then we moved, and then I started pursuing viola a little bit more seriously here.
And playing the forte, the youth orchestra string quartet.
Yes, ma'am.
Playing with Midori to coach you must have been quite an experience.
Yeah, we're all very, very nervous. She was incredibly kind and very supportive and caring and just an amazing woman.
And once you'd had, because you had the rehearsed sort of coaching period with her, and then you went and did two public performances one mm-hmm. day after the other, which again would have been quite a challenge, I would think.
Mm-hmm. We did. We went to the Children's Library, the one that just opened up, and then the next day we went to Terry, and it was fabulous.
I mean, to have that sort of experience is once in a lifetime, I would mm-hmm. think, for people who are still in high school and looking ahead to a career. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't know what else is going to come your way, but to start off with that sort of an experience is something very special. You are also the winner of the Stella Boldsmith Young Artist Competition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
And so you will be playing a soloist with the Arkansas Symphony, not with the Youth Orchestra.
Yes, I'm playing with the Arkansas Symphony.
What will you be playing, a full concerto?
No, I'll actually be playing the first movement of the Saint-Saëns Piano Concerto in G minor. That's actually a piano concerto, so I won the competition on piano.
Ah, well, that's interesting. Well, you can have your career in both directions. How long did it take you to decide to enter the Stella Boldsmith?
I was sitting on that decision for probably maybe 2 years. I had always known that it, you know, existed, but I never thought that I would be good enough on piano to try it. And then one summer I went to a camp, a summer camp where I actually did win competition there and was able to play with their camp symphony and really enjoyed it and loved it. And it was a great experience. And that kind of fueled the desire to apply for the Stella Boldsmith and compete to try and, you know, get that again.
How many of you were pianists? Who else did you have in that category?
There was one other pianist, but several different instruments were competing
oh, yes.
as well.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, question of you before we go over to Taylor and get some of her background. The repertoire, the conducting the youth orchestra, is that decided the spring before the fall season starts that has the side-by-side the next spring?
Well, it's usually a program that exists in six or seven different incarnations before we actually finalize it. But usually at some point during the spring when Philip and I are talking about programming for the following season, you know, or even earlier, we've certainly had conversations already, you know, as we've been finalizing the ASO season for next year,
right,
what the side-by-side repertoire will be for next spring. Of course, we usually start from a standpoint of, well, what else is the youth orchestra going to be working on and what is the logical progression? And, you know, it's always a bit of a wait and see because, you know, with any sort of youth ensemble, there, of course, is turnover and our, you know, wonderful students go on to college. And so, you know, you don't always know exactly what you're going to have going into the next year. And so, you know, sometimes adjustments need to be made, but that's why we're flexible, yes, and have lots of choices.
So what did you choose for this year?
And we're playing Beethoven's Egmont Overture, which is actually a piece we performed on our own, and then we'll be playing excerpts from Stravinsky's Firebird Suites, which we've been working on, and the symphony has also performed in some of its runouts, so it's going to be really fun to bring the groups together. And so, but I just wanted to say it's so fun sitting here listening to these young ladies' stories about side-by-side, because of course it made me immediately start thinking about my first side-by-side concert, not here, but when I was in youth orchestra in high school. One of my first side-by-side concerts was when I was a student at Interlaken for the summer at the Interlaken Arts Camp, and we did a side-by-side with the Detroit Symphony. We were playing Shostakovich 5, and it's the only time I've ever broken a string during a performance. Well, obviously, never forget that.
But. Taylor, your background now with your music, you're going to be an engineer, you're going into engineering when you go to college, but you've obviously had music in your background for a long time.
Not exactly. I was actually in sixth grade, I guess that's around 12 years old, and I didn't know how to read music. I was in choir, though, and one of my friends was in orchestra. She played the cello, and she was just begging me to come join orchestra. It was already into the 9 weeks, and we just started school. I didn't really want to change my schedule. And so she kept begging me, and I finally decided to go ahead and try it. And it's the setting where you walk in and they say, oh, you look like you can play this instrument, here you go. And so I was sort of handed the violin, and I didn't really think I would catch up very quickly, but I did. And by the end of the year, I was sort of first chair of that sixth grade orchestra, and I continued. And as I joined youth orchestra in the seventh grade, I think I began to take it a little more seriously.
What was it that sparked it? Because you obviously get it a little bit more seriously if you're the concertmaster. Sort of thing that realize how quickly the young can pick up on something special and do it. You find that. You work with them all the time, don't you, Jeff?
Definitely. And I think either Taylor or Olivia will agree that what we've accomplished this year is really something special, which really culminated with Midori being here and us bringing our performance to a new level. But I think that this is also the first year, I believe, this season in a couple, next week, we'll be performing a complete symphony from start to finish, all four movements, Dvorak's Eighth. And I think that's going to be an exciting moment that I'm really looking forward to. And you're always, it never ceases to amaze me what bars can be raised and how kids are willing to
because
meet those challenges.
A full symphony is very, very far removed from a complete suite or a couple of movements of a symphony. Mm-hmm. And have you found it demands a special amount of stamina that you hadn't quite realized was the challenge when you did the full symphony?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
It's much more draining to play a full symphony than just a one certain piece. Yeah, it definitely is. And even in just rehearsal this past week, I remember just coming out just exhausted and hurting, but, you know, very, very excited just to be able to play the whole thing all the way through.
When it's four movements, you can't afford to rest between movements.
Right. Yeah.
And so did you have much the same feeling, Taylor?
A little different. It was exhausting, but not that much. I think it's because the muscle memory, and it's just already there. We've played the first and second movements for, if you will, the first semester, and then the third and fourth movements for this semester, and now we're just putting it all together. So it was just sort of memory, and if you kind of relax, then it's there. But I do recall at the very end, the very last chord, I let out this huge breath, and then I realized how much we just went through.
Now, getting back to the experience with Midori, because you sat on Robinson's stage, Jeff was conducting you, and she was the soloist. And that in itself, to look at as a something to do with her, must have had a sort of effect where it's almost daunting, but it's so exciting you can't afford to be daunted.
It was kind of odd because, you know, you hear all year, oh, Midori is coming, Midori, Midori. And it's really exciting, but when she's actually standing right in front of you and you're watching her play and you're watching her just express herself, it's a totally different feeling. It's almost unrealistic, and you have to kind of set into that reality. And it was just amazing to be there, to be right there with her and to play with her.
And then you were the opposite side of the stage, weren't you? So the whole texture would have been different when you were listening, and yet would have that same feeling of like a super tension.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That, yes. You can't, it's almost for me, I was watching her and I was thinking, this woman has performed all over the world with the biggest symphonies, and it's a little overwhelming. You almost can't think about it, and you know, 'cause she's standing right there in front of you playing along with you.
An aura that she projects. You know, not only, of course, her artistry is unparalleled, but she was such an incredibly warm and accommodating and generous and thoughtful.
And you had her under your baton with the youth orchestra, mm-hmm. but then you were in the violin section, and you were part of the whole in terms of accompanying her mm-hmm. through this concerto.
And well, I think conducting a soloist is a bit like that as well. I mean, mm-hmm. conducting a soloist is knowing what your ensemble needs to be able to, help the soloist project his or her artistry. Mm-hmm. And going back to just briefly with the performance with the kids, it was incredible to see her energy and persona spread amongst the orchestra members, and you know, this sort of super tension that you talk about. Yeah, you know, there was a bit of nerves probably at the beginning, but she's really, her personality really settles that. But then the listening started, you know, and then the sounds that were being created on stage and the listening that was happening between orchestra members from one side of the stage to the other was also in a sort of hyperdrive that was something that I have talked about a lot and we had done in rehearsals on occasion. But, you know, it was our first performance to really accomplish that, and it gives us another jumping off point.
The three members of the ASOYO, the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra Youth Orchestra, who joined me in this conversation, were concertmaster violinist Taylor McKee, principal violist Olivia Richardson, and Jeff Robson, conductor. He is also associate conductor of the ASO. Olivia Richardson is the recent winner of the 2013 Stella Ball-Smith Young Artist Competition. She will be soloist with the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, a part of the prize, in the first movement of Saint-Saëns Piano Concerto No. 2. The concert at 7 p.m. May the 10th is in Robinson Center Music Hall. For tickets, call 501-666-1761 or visit arkansasymphony.org. May is Arkansas Heritage Month, so look statewide for activities celebrating the theme Saving Our Heritage, Arkansas Historic Structures. Visit the website arkansasheritage.com. Today in Jonesboro, the Delta Symphony closes the season in Arkansas State University's Fowler Center with a 2 p.m. concert. In Little Rock, UALR Opera Theater presents the third of three performances of two Menotti operas, The Medium and The Telephone. 3 p.m. in the Stella Ball-Smith Concert Hall, UALR Fine Arts Building. Hear the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra Pops Concert, Cirque de la Symphonie, 8 p.m. May the 11th and 3 p.m. May the 12th in Robinson Center Music Hall. Running through May the 12th are Arkansas Rep's Death of a Salesman and the Arkansas Arts Center Children's Theater, James and the Giant Peach. And in Fayetteville, Theater Squared's production of Next to Normal, in the Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studio Theater. Back in Little Rock at Weekend Theater, the latest production, The Paris Letter, opened on Friday and continues through May the 18th, each Friday and Saturday at 7:30. On exhibit at the Historic Arkansas Museum, the Washington Family Bible. And ending today, a photo exhibit, Hidden Arkansas. At the Clinton Library, Jazz by Herman Leonard. For more events, visit our online calendar at uanrpublicradio.org. The River City Men's Chorus is celebrating its 10th anniversary. So, to mark the occasion, the second of two newly commissioned works by composer Joseph M. Martin will be heard in a world premiere. In addition, the All Joseph Martin program will include audience and chorus favorites. David Glaze, music director and founder of the RCMC, with board president Jimmy Wilson, joined me last week to share some of their thoughts on the program. A Spring Awakening, David Glaze.
Sort of a inspiration from the first piece on the program, which is called The Awakening by Joseph Martin.
That is the commissioned piece?
No, it is not. It's one that's been in our repertoire for several years. Everything on the concert is by Joseph Martin.
So how many pieces is that?
18.
Some of them a cappella.
Some are and some are not. But we will be accompanied by a chamber orchestra.
Oh, great.
Strings, winds, and percussion, brass.
When you commission a work, do you have to go to the board and say, we'd like to do this as a special celebration of our 10th anniversary? We've got X number of dollars in the pot. We need a bit more. What do you suggest?
We do go to the board to see if it's okay, because as you would imagine, it does cost to commission a piece. But we felt like this was the time to do it, especially celebrating our 10th year. We actually talked about doing three commissions this year, but there's a lot that goes into that. So mm-hmm. We finally settled on two commissions.
And this particular composer, what is his stature that you are making the whole program with works of his? You've worked and used his music all the way through these 10 years?
Off and on we have, but I'll tell you, he's so well known in our country for as a composer of choral music, especially for churches and colleges and schools. And so he's highly recognizable as a choral composer. Mm-hmm. I've known him for a long time. I've worked with him in music festivals and conventions in past years, and such a wonderful fellow, and we're just really looking forward to having him here.
Where's he from? Is he from that hotbed of young composers in Minnesota?
No, he's actually from Austin. He and his wife, Sue, live there. Mm-hmm. And just a neat little story. His wife, Sue, is actually the voice of the Little Mermaid, Disney's Little Mermaid.
So this particular piece, did you have anything in mind or just tell him this was to celebrate 10th anniversary and he would come up with ideas and you would look or listen to them and decide which one to take?
That's the route we took. He suggested this text for us, and it's A Pluribus Unum, out of many one, which of course is from the Great Seal of the United States. And he writes a lot of patriotic music, and we felt like that this would fit into a grouping of patriotic music on our program, and that's the reason why we chose that. One, Who Are the Brave, has been sung in many occasions in Washington. On this program, we're doing a couple of arrangements, patriotic pieces such as God Bless America and My Country, 'Tis of Thee.
And when he and you are looking at this past decade, this past year, have you chosen pieces that touch the darker emotions as well as the feeling to celebrate?
Actually, we have. And I didn't know this until recently, but the very first piece in the program, The Awakening, was written because there was a school, and I'm sorry, I don't know where this school was, but it didn't have any sort of music. And this really wonderful woman went to the school and engaged all the students there, made them learn to love music and to be involved, and really started an excellent program there. And one night she went back to the school to retrieve something that she had forgotten, and she was murdered. And so the music at that school just died immediately, and they mourned her loss for a long time, but little by little, their confidence returned, and they started singing again. Thus, the piece, The Awakening, was written to celebrate the rise again of music.
Then was Joseph Martin aware of the story and wrote it without being asked to write it?
I'm not sure about that.
And is that one of the pieces for the whole choir or just a few voices?
It's for the entire chorus.
Chorus, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds like an interesting piece to start with. How do you follow on a piece like that?
We follow it with a piece called Come to the Music, and it's just an invitation for everybody to come and celebrate the joys of participating and listening to music.
Then, Jimmy, you've been a member of the chorus for quite a while, have you?
Yes, since 2006.
So that's not quite 10 years.
No, I was not one of the original 30 members of the group, but I feel like I've been there. It's an absolutely wonderful organization, and we've said it many, many times of our brotherhood and camaraderie mm-hmm. together, and it's just an incredible organization.
And I know that it's one of the events of the year that if you want to get a seat, you have to go two nights before.
That's correct.
So what are you, a baritone?
I sing tenor.
Tenor.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, a man of considerable value, I would think.
Absolutely. Yes. We love our tenors.
Got 18 pieces. With that number, how do you vary the speed and the weight of a program like
that? Well, I order them very carefully. You know, I try not to put pieces with the same tempo right next to each other. But thankfully, Joseph Martin really is very diverse in his writing. He writes a lot of pieces full of emotion and power, full of strong messages of hope and faith. Some of these have an almost classical sound to them. And then we'll turn right around and we'll do one that has sort of a gospel blues feel to it. One sort of has a folk air about it. There's some with a little jazz influence mm-hmm. to it. So I think he himself writes a lot of variation into his music.
And he writes the orchestral accompaniment or sets it as the commissioned work. People, did you ask for it to be written with an orchestral accompaniment?
This, the one that we've commissioned is not.
Oh, okay.
However, most of the pieces on this program are being accompanied by orchestra. And sometimes he does his own orchestrations, and sometimes he passes that off to one of his buddies.
Yeah. And where does that come? In the middle is a sort of arc?
It's in the middle of the second half, which features a lot of the patriotic music.
So the second half is largely that celebration of what you've done, but celebration of America and leading up to Memorial Day and all the things that
Absolutely.
Everybody celebrates.
Absolutely.
When you've commissioned something and you keep in touch with the composer, how long ahead of time do you want it finished before you agree to or you decide to put it on the program like you've done with this one?
We like for it to be finished at least 6 to 8 weeks before we perform it.
Oh, as short as that.
It's a fairly short time. But these guys are good now. They learn quickly. Mm-hmm. So at least 6 to 8 weeks. But we started this about a year or a year and a half ago, you know, securing his services and agreeing on the subject matter and all of that.
You've touched already a bit about the variety of his style. Does that mean that when you hear a piece that you don't know, but you think that he has a style that you recognize before you actually know whether it is he who has written it?
I think that's a very good question. I think with a lot of composers, especially if you hear multiple pieces on one program, I think you will begin to detect things about their music. Maybe it's their harmonic progressions or certain rhythm patterns that they like to use. You'll hear those creep into mm-hmm. you know several different pieces. But his are so varied that he disguises that a little bit, I think.
So you mentioned a few minutes ago a little bit of jazz, a little bit of folk, a little bit of this and that. What would you say is the overriding memory that this concert will leave the audience with?
I think there are so many messages of hope and encouragement to really dwell on that. And I love that about his writing. Wouldn't you say so, Jimmy?
It's very... The concert I was thinking about on the way over here, it's just such an uplifting, inspirational concert. I mean, every song for the guys in the chorus, we've talked about it many times, it just gives us all such a sense of pride and accomplishment to sing the pieces.
So when you finally got the finished work and the chorus heard it for the first time, what was the, you know, you would obviously discuss it amongst yourselves afterwards, but I'm sure there is a certain amount of give and take with new pieces particularly, and how David's going to balance you all in getting the full strength of the chorus, doing it at the best it can. What was a sigh of relief or hey, this is even better than we thought it would be? Or
well, it's a little unfair because we begin our rehearsal period typically 8 or 9 weeks prior to the performance. And this was no different, but we did not have the commissioned piece in our hands when we began the rehearsal period. We had a good sense of the flow of the concert and the pieces. When we finally received the commissioned piece about 3 weeks later, stuck in the middle, it gave us a little pause, mm-hmm. I think, initially on how it would fit. But as we progressed through the rehearsal and the program, it just fell right into place, and it's quickly become one of our favorite pieces.
Because I just wondered, with the composer who's responsible for all the works on the program, whether by the time you got the new piece, there was enough in your ear of his intonations, his style, his, as David was saying, the harmonies with which he works, that it felt more familiar than a brand new piece by an unknown composer might have been.
That's correct. It fell right into place. When you read through a piece of music the first time, it's hard to really soak it all in and grasp how good the piece of music is. But after the second or third run through, it was so very familiar.
What about the text that he uses? Does he use well-known poetry relative to the occasion, or does he write his own poetry? Well, for generally speaking.
Well, generally speaking, he writes a lot of lyrics himself, mm-hmm. but he's also used in the past J. Paul
Williams,
who died about 2 years ago from cancer, lived right here in Little Rock, but was known all over the United States for his beautiful text. And we have about, I'm thinking, 4 pieces on this program that were written by Paul. But Joe also uses poets such as Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. We're doing a piece called The Era and the Song. And then Alfred Lord Tennyson. The words are from Ulysses, The Quest Unending. So you get a little bit of that flavor, too, mm-hmm, when you mm-hmm. hear Joseph Martin's music.
Yeah.
I will also say this, that when a conductor is looking for a repertoire for a program, you'll try to find pieces that make good beginning pieces and good ending pieces, you know. As we've talked about in the course for this particular program, this is a program full of program enders, a lot of big pieces. And it just works that way because they're all by Joseph Martin. I might not put this many big pieces in any given program, but it just seemed to work out this time.
Well, that's interesting. So when we hear the first ender, we wait for the next second or third ender.
That's right. The program will end several times.
Yes, don't get up and leave. There will be more to come.
What about the orchestral accompaniment? How much does he vary that for pieces of significant size and conclusion?
How much does he vary that? Well, I think it depends on the piece, the style of the piece. You know, those that are a little jazzier with dance-like rhythms will have, you know, a different, like more percussion maybe. Fewer strings.
With a chamber orchestra that's mostly strings, is it then? Do you have percussion?
We do have percussion. We have one trumpet and then 2 woodwinds. So it'll be a nice full sound in there.
Sounds it, yes.
Yeah. I also want to tell you that Joseph Martin will be here for all 3 concerts. I don't know if you knew that, but
no.
He will be here. He will conduct some of the pieces and he will play some of the pieces, so you'll get to see that side of his gifts. And he's a fantastic pianist, a real performer.
David Glaze is the music director, and Jimmy Wilson is board president of the River City Men's Chorus, which celebrates its 10th anniversary in a program of music by composer Joseph M. Martin, which includes the premiere of a work, A Pluribus Unum, commissioned by the RCMC for the occasion. Performance dates and times are 3 p.m. today, 7 p.m. tomorrow and Tuesday, at Trinity United Methodist Church, Evergreen and Mississippi. Free and open to the public. Get there early if you want a seat. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.